This year, in a world with so many podcasts that do little more than talk about stuff and talk about other stuff too, you need a hero. You need a podcast with really, really, really good words. With all due respect, entertainment, politics, and life. The podcast that speaks to you, whether you listen or not. Now playing in Apple, Spotify, and all other streaming services.
Entertainment is the alchemy that transforms ordinary moments into extraordinary memories. Entertainment is the alchemy that transforms ordinary moments into alright. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's Andrew to entertain us.
In our entertainment segment, Pop-Tarts. My friends, we have made it crystal clear on this podcast that we are huge fans of those rectangular pieces of heaven. In fact, over 2 years ago, we did an entire segment on Pop-Tarts on this very podcast. So it seems like an appropriate time for a delicious history lesson from episode 43.
A history lesson.
The year was 1964, and kids throughout America woke up one morning to hear a product jingle that would change their lives. 4, 3, 2, 1, Pop-Tarts, new from Kellogg's. You can eat them on the run, eat them just for fun, eat them when you have a party. When you want a snack, eat them by the pack, all warm, tasty, good, and hearty. That was 1964. Pop-Tarts burst onto the scene. The name Pop-Tarts was influenced by Andy Warhol's pop art of the era. 3 years later, Kellogg's would debut the Frosted Pop-Tart.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I believe that Pop-Tarts are critical to the survival of mankind. And I also believe that understanding history is critical to the survival of mankind. So, praise be to Netflix. Last week, Netflix released the movie Unfrosted. The story is loosely based on the epic battle between Kellogg's and Post in the war to get the first toaster pastry to grocery store shelves in 1964. The movie stars Jerry Seinfeld, Jim Gaffigan, Amy Schumer, and does not disappoint. In a time when milk and cereal ruled breakfast, this is the story that answers the question why kids today ask for Kellogg's Pop-Tarts instead of Post Country Squares. So check it out. Unfrosted, now streaming on Netflix.
The Politics Segment with Andrew and Ethan. Talking more, making sense.
In our politics, today we want to take a look at the big picture. And when you look at the big picture, you are seeing a complete erosion of trust and transparency in state government. Ethan, let's go through the list of some of the attacks on our freedoms under Mike Dunleavy under the last 6 years. First, we've got freedom of speech issues. One of the first things he did was, of course, issue a loyalty oath and force state employees to sign it. A few sued. The court ruled that it was unconstitutional. So he's attempted to silence state employees. He's introduced legislation to outlaw protest. He has proposed rules that would eliminate public notice on agency action. He has limited the amount of information that's available to the public after ethical complaints against government officials. I mean, where are we headed with this? And this is the first on my long list of things I want to talk about. Where are we headed with this restriction of freedom of speech under Governor Mike Dunleavy?
Andrew, pattern recognition is an important way of analyzing what is happening to us and regardless of what the subject matter is. And I look at all these patterns where there's restrictions on freedom and where there are efforts by this administration to get a leg up on its opposition. And one of the cautionary tales of a Democratic government is whatever one government can do to its opponents, the opponents can do to it later on. And so that should be a way of making sure that everybody follows the rules. And so the danger I see here is there's a lack of respect for freedoms and there's a lack of transparency. And the functional problem in a democracy is if we're a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, then you shouldn't do things to the people. And that's what I'm seeing here. It's a pattern of doing things to the people that you don't like.
Well, and again, let's continue down the list. Certainly the second category has to be taking away the freedoms of choice, whether you're talking about taking away women's rights by filing amicus briefs to support other states' lawsuits to restrict rules, restrict access to health care for women, LGBTQ, taking away powers from local school districts and local communities, trying to kill local oversight boards, trying to control local libraries. I mean, of course, the biggest one was the attempt to gerrymander Alaska's voting districts that the court came out and struck down. I mean, look, let's face it, without transparency, right, you're going to get corruption, you're going to get mismanagement, abuse of power, you're going to have economic stability, social inequality. I mean, all of the things that we're experiencing now in this state, right? And as I just pointed out, you're losing both your freedom of speech and freedom of choice under this governor. And in this like infiltrates every level, every commission, every board that this guy has appointed people to.
The challenge we have is to make sure people trust their government. I mean, there's an inflexibility that happens when governments become too brittle, too one-sided. And when they get that brittle, the democracy starts to falter. And we're living in very divided times as it is today anyway. And the challenge that a leader should have is how to bring people together instead of wedging them apart. And all these efforts that wedge Alaskans apart, that sacrifice one group's freedoms in order to promote the agenda of another group, these are short-sighted. These divide us. These don't bring us together. The old Confucian wisdom about a strong wind will fall a mighty oak, but merely bend a blade of grass applies here. Democracy is fragile. And you need to find a way of allowing opposition to exist, because one day the current people in power will be in opposition. And that's the way democracy works. And if there's not a respect for that fundamental notion that change will occur, then there's not a fundamental respect for democracy.
Well, and you circle back and you look at some of the things that have happened over the last 6 years, even in the last, I'd say, 2 years, right? So again, without transparency, you're going to have corruption, right? We're having conversations today about a permanent fund board member who has been out self-dealing, trying to get permanent fund business for her father's company. Management abuse of power. I mean, we've seen that in the Dunleavy administration for 6 years, abusing their powers, using the courts to punish enemies. It's been, you know, these are the things that I worry about, because, of course, this is part of, as you said, a pattern of behavior. And then you look at the small details, not the small details, but the details we should be focusing on, which is education. And you realize all of this power grab, you know, the promotion of secrecy in this administration, the Clarksons, the Babcocks, the Jeremy Cubises of the world. I mean, the consistent refusal to, you know, fail to explain the significant moral and ethical lapses. This is really when you look at the condition of the state, whether you're talking about education or whether you're talking about the stagnant economy or the out-migration or all the challenges that the state faces, then you paint this in the backdrop of where leadership in this state is trying to take us by consolidating power and, you know, really restricting the rights of their neighbors. It's stunning to me. And it's stunning that nobody's really having this conversation.
The bigger picture is sometimes hard to see when your nose is pressed up against the glass. And we're trying to have a bigger picture conversation right now. You look at the instance you talk about with the allegations of self-dealing in the permanent fund. But this is not the first time that there's been problems with the permanent fund board in the last couple of years. There was the firing of Angela Rodell. There was a sort of the packing of the board with cronies. These are problems that are indicative of something bigger going on. And trying to steer the ship of the permanent fund towards a specific agenda means that you're taking away the permanent fund's autonomy and the permanent fund's ability to be an honest broker for all Alaskans. And that's a dangerous trend. You need to, with the permanent fund and with all things, you want to have professionals doing the job as best they can, independent from political considerations. And I get, you know, to borrow from Clausewitz, politics is just economics by other means. But you should make allow the people that are making financial decisions, economic decisions, do so according to their best financial and best economic judgment, not according to some political dictate or political goal in mind.
Yeah, the further we get away from the creation of the permanent fund, I think the further we get away from, obviously, the people who created it, because one of the things I really enjoyed as a legislator, probably like you did, was we got to talk to these people. We got to talk to these people that created these the funds and people like Jay Hammond and Charles Wolforth and Eric Wolforth, those people that were around when it was created. And you know, they were always very protective, right? This fund was supposed to be managed without strings, without undue pressure. I remember having a conversation with, I believe it was Eric Wolforth, and I said, you know, we should look at the permanent fund and we should start investing in communities. And he said, no, we shouldn't. We should invest in whatever provides the best return for the permanent fund. That's what this fund. This fund was not established as a, hey, put give me some money over here for my father's company or, you know, build me a road over here. The fund was developed to be invested with the most prudent decision-making possible. So, you know, we're getting away from those. We're getting away from those under the Dunleavy appointees to the Permanent Fund Board. What you've seen is you've seen people come in and propose riskier investments or targeted investments towards companies that might help them or their family members. That's what you're seeing now. And we are getting so far away from really the intent of the Permanent Fund Corporation. It's stunning to me. And you're absolutely right. Running out Angela Rodel, because, you know, she was the biggest foil against Governor Dunleavy.
There's the cautionary tale that we always had when we were in the legislature was about the Heritage Fund, I believe out of Alberta, which did invest locally as opposed to doing things with, that were what a reasonably prudent investor would do, which is the standard that the permanent fund is supposed to adhere to. And departing from the reasonably prudent investor standard is incredibly problematic. The rules for a reasonably prudent investor standard are relatively well known. They're in flux, as all things are. They evolve over time, but they're established. And it means that the permanent fund is going to be managed according to professional standards rather than according to the whimsy of current political dictates. And that's a really important thing. It is a permanent fund. It is not a temporary fund. It is a permanent fund which belongs to all the people of all generations, not just to the particular group that's in power at this particular time.
Well, and I think the, you know, the firing of Angela Rodel was really the warning sign that we all should have paid attention to, because, you know, for the first time since the fund was created, I have to question the integrity of the fund's investment strategy, right? In the pressure that's being brought about board members, because, you know, it was clear not just from the fact that this woman was trying to coordinate and manipulate investment strategy and bring in an air of favoritism, right, as a board member, but she actually went in and said her father thought somebody should be fired because he didn't like the guy's investment strategy. I mean, imagine that. And this is the people's fund, right? Jay Hammond, this is the people's fund, right? And now you have out-of-staters making side deals with the People's Fund of Alaska. And this is the kind of, you know, these kinds of ethical lapses. I mean, this is what Dunleavy's been swimming in for 6 years. But now you're talking about an $80 billion fund that's truly the future of this state.
Well, with the permanent fund, you can put dollars attached to all these things. With things like freedom of speech, right to choose, those, it's hard to put dollar values on them. But those are also part of the same pattern. And that's a pattern where political decisions are based on transitory political considerations in order to advance a particular political goal which is the purview of any administration that's in power. But you have to do it respecting the underlying principles that should unite Alaskans, the underlying values that are common to all of us. And I think what is nearly ubiquitous, which is nearly common to all of us, is the idea that you need to have a transparent government, that you want to have as much freedom as possible accrue to individuals and to the people of the state, so that we can live the lives that we choose to live. Not follow what would be a theocracy where one particular religious viewpoint takes precedence, or a partisan outlook where one political party's temporary interests are advanced. There should be a much greater adherence, or at least an expression of an adherence to principle that is defensible, and that has not occurred. It is all about what we're going to do to advance a specific transitory agenda.
And what's beautiful about transparency is transparency provides accountability, trust your government, right? It makes possible effective governance, prevention of corruption. I mean, you know, all of these great things that you need, efficiency and innovation, right? I mean, economic development, all of the things that this state needs comes from a transparent government where people can participate. Right? Not having committee hearings in Juneau where you don't allow public participation. Not as a governor supporting measures to reduce the public's ability to understand what's going on within some of these agencies.
The problem with pendulum politics, where it swings to one side and then to the other, is it invites retribution. And when you swing from one side to the other side, you're not moving forward. And it's a truism that by standing still, by staying stationary, we are falling behind. The world is very mobile right now. There is a lot of change happening. And if Alaska isn't taking the steps that are necessary so we can be competitive, we can be attractive, we are falling farther and farther behind. We are, you know, in some ways, we're stuck in that backwater that the founders warned us about, where we wind up just being a resource development colony for the rest of the world, and everyone else makes profit, and Alaskans are stuck with crumbs and no real control over our own fate.
All right, final question. What's your prediction for the mayor's race?
LaFrance by 10.
I agree. Ethan, good to see you, my friend.
Excellent. You hang in there.
Yo, in the life segment, we welcome our podcast travel guru, MC Scott McMurrin. Upgrade Alaska Airlines with miles, leg room, champagne, big smiles, hotel with beds, Avis car with wheels. My boy Scotty M got them deals.
In our life segment, on the last episode of this podcast, we took a very, very hard stance against hotel hot tubs. And no sooner did we upload that episode than I got a message from this podcast travel guru, Scott McMurrin, who said, au contraire, mon ami. So here on this segment is my dear friend Scott McMurrin to list his three favorite hot tubs.
Yeah, you know, normally I'd say wee-wee, but I don't really want to come back with that when we're talking about a hot tub, you know? It's just too awkward. So speaking of awkward, I do have, you know, I mean, there is a time and a place for a hot tub on holiday. And the one that immediately came to mind, Andrew, is our friends in Maui at the Napili Kai Beach Club. If you've never been to Napili Kai, it's just shy of Kapalua, way past the burn zone there at Lahaina. And you know, God help those people in Maui. It's been a real tough deal. We visited, you know, many, well, dare I say decades ago. When this particular tub was built, it was the largest hot tub in Hawaii. And they call it the Hanky Panky Pool. It's an outdoor unit, looks over Napili Bay. And it is a thing of beauty. And part of that, too, is the heritage of that particular venue there in Napili Kai. It was put together by some families there in the 1960s when Maui wasn't even a thing. So I recommend it. It's cool. You know, no smoking, no drinking, no glass in the pool, please. Now, for my number two pick, I've got to tell you, I'm moving away from the hotel, and this is a freestanding hot spring on a lake in Iceland, and it's called Lagervatn Fontana. Don't ask me. I mean, I hope I got the pronunciation right. Anyway, Siggy is the owner. And if you've never been to Iceland, everybody there is hot and wet because the whole island itself is on fire and it bubbles up through these springs. And so this particular Fontana is clean as a whistle. You will never go back to Chena Hot Springs, by the way, after you've been to Fontana. Siggy has these huts for saunas built over the mud pots themselves. It is incredible. And then to the right of them, these beautiful Scandinavian pools that are fabulous. And they've got a pier that walks, that goes right out onto the lake where they catch the lake trout right there. And here's another tricky thing. They actually bake bread in the sand. The sand is hot to the touch. They take a Dutch oven out there, dig a hole in the sand, bury it, and come back 24 hours later, and there's your bread. It's an amazing thing. Okay? So for number, go sit, tell Siggy I said hi. It's a great thing. Thing of beauty. Third one, Andrew, you've probably been there. I have never been there. This is on my bucket list to go to the giant public hot springs in Japan. I mean, they're called onsens, and there's jillions of them. The one that I picked out is the biggest and best in Japan. I don't know where it is, but it's called Kusatsu, the Kusatsu Hot Spring Baths. And before you go to a bath in Japan, there's a whole protocol where you actually got to clean up before you get in. So if hot springs are part of your holiday, those are some spots that I would recommend.
Scott McMurrin, as always, thank you for your travel guidance, my friend.
Ciao, amici miei. Ci stiamo avvicinando alla fine del podcast. Quindi godiamoci i restanti momenti che abbiamo insieme con alcuni commenti di chiusura. Loosely translated into English, the end is near. Closing comments are here.
In closing comments, our education governor. At a recent press conference, Governor Mike Dunleavy signaled that he would support the $175 million in extra school funding this year approved by the legislature. As you'll remember, he vetoed a prior increase in education funding earlier, claiming that neighborhood schools were failing, and our best hope is to invest in correspondence in homeschools. But in a sudden reversal, Dunleavy was quoted in the press saying, quote, "I've told people I'm open to an increase in one-time funding, especially to help with inflationary issues," he said. First off, Christ almighty, listen to this guy. Does this guy even have a backbone, right? Quote, "I've told people I'm open to an increase in one-time funding." How about if you just say that? How about if you just say, "As governor, I support a one-time increase in funding to help with inflationary issues." How about if you just phrase it that way? "I've told people, according to some people have said." Jesus Christ, dude, be a leader. But more importantly, this shows how education funding is simply a toy to the governor, a toy that he plays with instead of a thought-out, planned investment with expected returns. Now consider this. Governor Mike Dunleavy, for his entire political career, has complained about the lack of accountability in public schools. "Oh, we give schools money and then they come back and ask for more with no improvement. It's all special interest, blah, 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 blah." But yet, here is Dunleavy acquiescing to increase funding without any stated expectations, without even the slightest plan on what will be accomplished with this $175 million. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I would submit to you, if this was a governor who was clearly interested in improving education for all students in Alaska, he would have a plan. Especially after the last 3 months of telling anyone who would listen that public schools are failing and they need more accountability. But after that, the guy says he supports a $175 million increase without any accountability. Why? Because it's not about accountability. Because schools are already accountable in a half a dozen different ways. It's never been about accountability, because if it were, the governor would have created a roadmap to improve education outcomes 6 years ago. This isn't about accountability, it's about control. Because as long as public schools are underperforming, the governor has a big funding stick to swing at them. Honestly, if Governor Mike Dunleavy was truly concerned about accountability in education, he'd be concerned that only a fraction of homeschoolers take standardized tests, and he'd be demanding more results for our money. But again, it's never about accountability. It's about ideology. After all, the Dunleavy administration has been the least accountable administration in the history of this state. I mean, hell, even Frank Murkowski took responsibility for Greg Rehnquist. Look, this is about control. And next year, the governor's going to say the same thing he said this year. Oh, last year we gave him $175 million, but look, they're still failing. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to rinse and repeat this nonsense from Governor Mike Dunleavy for another 2 long years.